Who sent the fruits last time to the kitchen? Whoever did, thank you. The other day I received an email from someone who said that he considers his guru to be Shirdi Sai Baba. But he said, I have lost faith in Shirdi Sai Baba, and his question was, how do I reconnect my faith in him? So if there is a full acceptance that whatever happens in your life is his will, then that faith can never be broken. But if there is a partial acceptance, when only good things happen in your life, when things go your way, that is not total faith. Full faith is to fully accept each moment as it arises, as his will, as the will of the divine. But what we do is we set ourselves up against ourselves and say, this should not be this way, it should be that way. We may not like it, we may not like what the present moment has offered us, maybe it's very painful, which is also part of the acceptance. But the suffering we create is by saying, this should not be, it should be this way. So that is a compromised faith. That is when your connection with the source gets broken. So if there is a complete surrender, a complete acceptance of what is, then that is full faith in the will of the divine. The hope, the wish may be for a situation to turn around, for events to change, because we are born in the human form. That is a natural arising. But the suffering which we overlay on our current pain, this teaching shows you a way out of that suffering. Because life is imprisonment, but we convert the simple imprisonment to rigorous imprisonment. That is what we do. A friend of mine, he's in his mid-50s, he lost his son a few days ago, who's in his mid-20s. Now the son was physically challenged since birth, suffering, wheelchair bound, you know, they really looked after him very well. But the thought which arose for me was, the suffering is over. The pain will be felt by the parents, of course, but the suffering of that person is over. He is back home. And we take our own health for granted. The fact that we will wake up the next morning is completely taken for granted. And then we don't get along with people, and the drama of the me, of the story, of the identified consciousness begins, and we get consumed by it, overwhelmed by it. Our simple living is taken for granted. Our health is taken for granted. When things are going smoothly, nobody thinks of God. That is the nature of the ego. We are gifted a body. The body is a cage itself because we've got confined to a body. In deep sleep, we are not aware of our body. And that is why deep sleep is so peaceful, because body consciousness has gone. So we are caged in our body, we are confined to our body, yet through the body, through the consciousness, through understanding, we can access the divine. That is why it is said that the body of a sage is the temple of the living God being consciousness. And that is why many sages are not cremated, their samadhis are made. Because the acknowledgement is there that this is the temple of the divine. So peace, peace of mind in daily living, which is one's own nature, because there is absolute peace in deep sleep. Peace of mind in daily living, to taste that, to not get tossed around between pleasures and pains, ups and downs, highs and lows, is a natural wish which arises, because one knows what that peace is deep down. Now, one of the roles I have is of a publisher of spiritual books. I received a call of young man, must be in his mid to late 30s. He was very agitated because his guru, he saw aspects of his guru which shook him to the core. He heard stories, he saw things happening. So he was just probably wanting an outlet to speak to someone, and he was telling me, you know, can you believe this happened? Can you imagine he did this, he said this, I saw this. I saw a lot of stuff going on which should not have been happening for someone in such a state. And I listened because I was waiting to see if what else would he say besides criticizing the personality or an event or happening. And you won't believe it, right at the end it came. He said, sir, can I tell you one more thing? Whenever I have left his place, I have never felt at peace. Now that is the most important. That was for me, till that stage, I did not say anything. Because his question was, what should I do? I said, see, ultimately it is your decision. But I would, out of all that you have spoken about, I have no views to express because it's your situation. But peace. As Ramana Maharshi said, what are the signs of a sage? The degree of peace you feel in his presence and the level of respect you feel for him. So if you have not got a taste of that, you have not touched that, then by all means, if you feel your relationship is over, move on. But where is the question of criticism? Who is criticizing whom? One individual is criticizing another individual. That needs to be looked into. We are all operating on our nature, conditioning, genetics, whatever you call it. Something doesn't resonate with you, move on. As Maharaj would say, criticizing anyone is ultimately criticizing the affairs of Brahman. Brahman knows best. And here we have usurped the subjectivity of Brahman and started criticizing people. So where is the question of criticizing? You may have set certain standards, certain levels of acceptance, understanding, which have not been met. They have not been met. But where does the criticism come in? And the criticism is a dialogue going on in your own consciousness. If you are criticizing someone even in your mind or verbally, the other person has nothing to really do with it because it is in your own individual identified consciousness in which the criticism is arising. So ultimately, you are criticizing yourself because there is no other. So there is no room for criticism with the understanding. What happens when there is no room for blame, condemnation, guilt, criticism, jealousy, envy, hatred, malice? The thinking mind, which used to be engaged in doing all that, is no longer doing that. And that space gets created. The space of awareness, the space of being in the moment, the space of an acceptance of what is, which was always there, which got covered by these veils of criticism, judgment, negation, that starts glowing. That is the light of understanding. What is the point of any teaching if in your daily living you are still going to be engaged in all this? So the space which was taken up by content of me, my story, my judgments, my criticisms gets released. The rigorous imprisonment becomes simple imprisonment. Life starts flowing. That is so beautiful. I'll give you a very simple example which happened a couple of days ago. One of the friends in our school batch, ever since we've known him, he can't stop talking. Even in school, you know, you would meet him and the dialogue would start. In college, you'd meet him, the dialogue would start. It was a non-stop talking. So a lot of friends would say, "Arey, isse dur rehna." You know, we get bored listening to him, which is fine. You don't have to force yourself to listen to someone non-stop. But truly, the understanding deep down is he is not doing it. Why is he talking non-stop? What was the need? When did it arise? When did the child start talking non-stop? Usually, it happens when the child is not getting attention. So the way to keep the attention to it is to start talking, to start engaging. Look at me. Don't ignore me, is the plea of the child. And that gets ingrained, and the adult continues that process unconsciously. Because if I stop talking, who will I be? If I am in a group of three or four people and I stop talking, will people acknowledge me? Or will I disappear? What will happen to me if nobody notices me? Right? Now, where is the question of criticizing someone for talking nonstop when you truly see that obviously this is the way he was made? And at some point, by the grace of the divine, maybe an understanding dawns, maybe there's an introspection, and there's a shift which occurs in him, which will take its own course. But he might be at an advantage over us, because we all are talking nonstop inside our head. When we sit quietly, you start seeing, when you brush your teeth, you start seeing the thoughts which come up. A barrage of thoughts start. And if you look at those thoughts, you will see that most of them are connected to a sense of doership. Even if it is as simple as, today I have to do this, at 4 o'clock I have to go there. You know it, you've noted it in your diary, but that is going on. That is the ego, because that one end of the thought is the ego. And that is non-stop talking. Ye kya bolega mujhe? What will she think about me? What is this person going to say? And you're reminding yourself of so many things, which is the nature of the mind, which you needn't remind yourself of because you're going to be doing those things in any case. So when an investigation is done into doership, one is to look at the physical actions in life of oneself and others, but one is also to look within. And when you look within and see these thoughts, you can see which thoughts are spontaneous thoughts, which thoughts are getting stretched in the duration of time, which thoughts are just camouflaging the what is, and it becomes quite a joyful game to play if the awareness arises. And who knows, one day you're brushing your teeth and it takes a while until the first thought comes and you say, wow, who knows. So when the thinking mind of doership is disengaged in the waking state, this starts happening. The what is starts blossoming, and that rigorous imprisonment we bound ourselves in with chains, those chains start snapping. I'll tell you all a joke on this simple imprisonment which a friend of mine shared. Of course, he has no concept of this teaching, but he used the term simple imprisonment, so I said it was a good one. So there was a lady who stole some apples from an apple cart, and she was caught and taken to the court. So her hearing came up and the judge asked her that, why did you do this? It was broad daylight and you stole apples, and it's wrong in the eyes of the law. So she said, Your Honor, I was hungry. So the judge thought she's being quite cheeky, you know. So he said, all right, how many apples did you steal? So she said, I stole 6 apples. And happily, with a smile on her face. Huh? So the judge said, all right, I am going to give you 6 days of simple imprisonment, 1 day for each apple that you stole. So she was shocked. She went white. Such a harsh judgment. She looked at her lawyer. Nobody is supporting her. She said, Your Honor. Now behind her, her husband put up his hand. So she was very relieved. She said, at least he is going to talk on my behalf. So the judge said, yes, what is it? So the husband said, Your Honor, my wife is only saying half the truth. So the judge was perplexed, called him up to the witness box and said, what is the other half? He said, Your Honor, she even stole a can of beans. The other day, someone asked me, can you give me a mantra? I said, there is only one mantra which I got from my guru, which he gave everyone. And there was no initiation process, no initiation ceremony, no diksha. But if you can live by that mantra, you don't have to chant it every time. But if you can live by it, it will have a direct impact on your daily living. And it was a simple mantra. Consciousness is all there is. Could it be simpler? That's it. Chant that mantra.
The better mantra that he gave is let life flow.
Yeah.
I feel that this is the three-word mantra.
Did I tell you all about the let life flow and that man in New Zealand and the flood? I'll repeat it. I think Suresh might remember it. I'm not sure. There was this man in his 60s. I had just started going to Ramesh. And he said, my now last day has come. Can I come over and see you for a cup of tea? So I said, you come to the office. So he came. I've forgotten his name. I know he was from New Zealand. So he said, you know, Ramesh is my guru. It's my first trip to Ramesh. He's my guru. Because what he said actually happened in life. So I said, what happened? He said that there were floods in New Zealand. And he said it was so bad, that the river took our house away. And he said, I burst out laughing. They were all put on the, they knew things were going to happen and there would be landslides. So the rescue teams had come. He said, when it happened, I burst out laughing because I had read a book of Ramesh's where he said, be still and let life flow. And here the river was flowing with his house away and his wife thought he was mad. She said, are you mad? A house has gone and you're laughing. And he said, then I knew I had to come and see Ramesh. So of course it would be painful to have your house get washed away. But there would be full acceptance that this has happened because it was meant to happen. Then whatever is suffering is pain in the moment. How do I sort my finances out? Where do I stay? How do we rebuild the house? It's a process one goes through. But many of us have a problem with why me? Why did this happen to me? This should not have happened to me. I've done so many good deeds in life. I have not harmed anyone. Why did my house have to get washed away? Why is it that when I am in a queue at Inox waiting for my popcorn, it's always the other queue which goes fast and mine is taking time?
Always.
This should not happen. When I'm entering the airport, there are always these two lines with everyone with their trolleys. The one I go to, it gets stuck. Why does this happen to me?
Happens at the toll booths also.
Me, me, me. Someone asked me a topic which I rarely talk about, which is the law of attraction. You know, what are the views of Advaita on the laws of attraction? Now, it's actually quite simple. Even our Vedas have the law of attraction. It is there in our Vedas. I am that is an affirmation. Make no mistake. But what is happening today is this force is strengthening the me. It is about acquiring material things. I want this. I want that car. I want that house. The me, the me, the me. And what happens, in many cases, you don't get what you want. That is still okay. But what you think you want may not turn out being good for you. You may fall in love with this girl and say, I want her. And when you all are together, it's a nightmare, right? So this law of attraction, fundamentally, as Maharaj would say, if you've read Maharaj, he would say that for some people, I give them statements. Because if you're talking of an affirmation, aim for the highest. Why are you aiming for material benefits, which are temporary? One of his affirmations, because I was working on editing that book, was, he said, repeat every night, I am luminous. I am like ether. I am indestructible and I am formless. And you will become that. Because it continues in your sleep. That is an affirmation. I am luminous, I am like ether. I am formless, I am pure, I am indivisible, I am indestructible. There may be a natural arising for material objects and one can strive towards them. But our life's experience, and as the Bhagavad Gita says, the results are not in your control. Do your best, thereafter it's God's will. So one has to be a bit careful with these tools. I had met an Australian doctor at a seminar years ago. I'm going back to 2004. Young man, he had written a book, I've forgotten the name. And he said that one of his patients was in a very advanced stage of cancer. So he enrolled in Australia, this was, he enrolled for a course where they guaranteed him that if he followed diligently this process of attraction and affirmations, he would be cured. And he kept deteriorating. And in his last days, this is what the doctor told me, he died with so much guilt because when he told the course facilitators that it is not helping me, you know what they told him? You didn't put your heart and soul into it. Therefore, it didn't work. Now tell me, someone who's in their last stage, if they don't put their heart and soul into it, who will put their heart and soul into it? So this is layering doership upon doership upon doership. If you do this, you will be okay. If you do that, you will be okay. Where someone who could have, who was in any case deteriorating, now went on with the baggage of guilt that you did not do it properly. Where does this end? And this is an extreme case. This is what we tell our own selves every day. With small things in life, I should have not said that. She got upset because I told her that. If I had not told her that, she would not have got upset. Should. So, ye sab bhool jao. I mean, truly, we should love ourselves exactly the way we are, including all our faults, all our flaws, because God made us this way. Thereafter, if we feel we need to do things to change, to improve ourselves, by all means. But total acceptance of ourselves and others, and then the let life flow will be the flow of the working mind without the obstruction of the thinking mind. That would be the beauty of life. Each situation presents itself. Sometimes pleasure, sometimes pain. Go with the flow. Do what has to be done. And in this life, in this way of living, we are not building dams. Otherwise, we are always building dams. Every day, we set up new dams. The water should not flow that way. Dam. The water should not flow that way. Dam. Not flow there. Dam. These are dams of separation. Separation from others. Separation from situations which we don't like. So we have to stop this obsession with building dams. We have to stop the obsession with blaming ourselves. One lady had come, I think she's been here a couple of times, and she thought the world was against her. Everyone in the household, in life. So I said, what brought you here? She said, I was forced to come. Now, that is also the will of the divine. You will not be at a place if you are not meant to be. She had read a book of mine. And I said, let's take a hypothetical situation. Supposing you don't see other people as other people. Supposing I put a mask on them, which is your face. Now what would your relationship be with them? So she started thinking about it. She became uncomfortable. Her body started, it was kind of almost twitching. So she was thinking a lot. And I said, there's no need to think. I just asked a simple question which needn't be answered. So promptly she said, no, but I hate myself also, so that wouldn't work. I said, fair enough. So I told her the same question someone asked Satya Sai Baba. I have read it in one of the books. So he told that person that if that is so, then anytime you feel offended by anyone, you replace that person's face with mine. Which means what? Ultimately, he's not past an egocentric statement. But if that person's guru was Satya Sai Baba, which is the higher ideal of the self, and if you start seeing the guru, not as a form, this is a stepping stone, but if you start seeing the guru in everyone, you are not going to hold a grudge against everyone for too long, because you will start accepting that this is all the leela, this is the play of the divine, which is one. So if we really feel that we have a problem with a lot of people, it's a pointer to look within, because there are no lots of people. There's only one wearing the mask of many. And if we have a relationship of harmony, equanimity, a general steadiness in our relationships, whether it is a family member, whether it is a beggar on the road, whether it is a colleague at work, then that is a good sign that one has settled into a acceptance and understanding of the basics of life. Old conditioning might yet kick in and we react, because it takes a long time to transform the old conditioning. Sometimes it happens spontaneously, but even that one looks at and one could end up laughing, because the truth is known now. And someone had asked me, you know, I'm going to this guru, then I'm going to that guru, and I'm going to that guru in the south, and then that guru on YouTube. So I said, fair enough, that's a phase. But are you sure you know what you're looking for? Because unlike shopping, where we might like a red shirt, a green shirt, and a pink shirt, and we might want a Zara, or we might want a Prada, or whatever, this is not shopping. This is not shopping because, unlike material objects, you're shopping for only one thing, which is your home. You don't have many homes, so that compulsion to shop, which is going out to shop, find that one thing which is taking you back home and be with it. This is not the process of acquiring. This is the process of letting go. This is the process we go through every night. When we go to deep sleep, you've left everything in the waking state and gone to deep sleep. The difference being, it's not voluntary. You don't choose to go into deep sleep. But everything is given up. The divine has given everything in the waking state up and slipped into deep sleep. So, kitne jagah jaoge? How many books are you going to read? How many videos are you going to see? It is all part of the process. As long as the clarity is there, that what is it that I am looking for, then by all means let it take its course. Let the seeking take its course. But if that clarity is not there, it can be an endless engagement, endless, which is the engagement of the mind. So that which has lit that flame in the heart, which has given you that glimpse of your absence, given you the understanding of life, be with that. Explore that more. Sleep with that. Taste that. Touch that. That is a living meditation. And coming back to that first conversation, I told that boy, I said, I don't know much about your guru and the problems you've had, but a true guru does not want to acquire disciples. A true guru will not say he is a guru. So you need to explore your relationship with your guru and you need to reach a conclusion. I'll tell you all a story concerning Maharaj, a friend of mine who's now about 65. He was a disciple of Swami Muktananda of Ganeshpuri. And Muktananda had gone on tour. So he was at a loose end. So he told a friend of his, let's go and meet this Bidi Baba. He was called Bidi Baba, Maharaj. He used to smoke Bidis. Let's go and meet him. We've heard so much about him. Many people have gone. So they said, okay. So my friend and his friend came to Bombay and they had time to kill. So the other friend said, I have found one astrologer who is very reputed. So I'm going to go to him, I'll find him and I'll try and get a reading and I'll join you at Maharaj's home. What will you do? So my friend said, no, I have no interest in this. You know, I'm with my guru and I've given up this pursuit of knowing the future and all that. So I'll walk on Marine Drive, because Maharaj was at Khetwadi. And I'll walk down there and I'll see you there. So they went. He went, my friend went, and this man joined him there. Now my friend has told me this firsthand. So the satsang was happening and he was looking at Maharaj. Now what he noticed was, when Maharaj would look at his friend, Maharaj was getting a bit irritable. So this was playing on my friend's mind that, you know, whenever he's looking in that direction of the attic, you know, he's like itching to say something, or something was making him, you know, and he was like, he could not put a finger on it. So towards the end of the satsang, Maharaj asked my friend, "Where have you come from?" So he said, "We were with Baba Muktananda and he's on tour and we've heard so much about you, we've come for your blessings." So Maharaj looked at him for a good 2 minutes. He said, "I saw so much kindness in his eyes." And he said, "Don't come here. Beta, idhar mat aana, aapka guru Muktananda hai. Your guru is Muktananda. You don't need to come here. But you buy this booklet." This was Maharaj's first book called Self-Knowledge and Self-Realization, which is quite abstract because it's a lot about his experiences. It's not what comes later in I Am That. He said, "You give me 2 rupees, you buy this book and you go with my blessings." So my friend said, you know, "Thank you." Then he looked at the other man. He said, "You have no shame." He said, "You are going to an astrologer and then coming to listen to me when I talk about Brahman. Get out of my attic." And he had not uttered a word that he had gone to the astrologer. He said, "My whole teaching is that you're not the body. My whole teaching is abide in the beingness. And before coming to this place, that too from your guru, you are going to an astrologer and coming, you have no shame." He said, my friend started shaking like this and just put his head down and ran. Which is not to say not to go to astrologers, but the point being made is that don't lose sight of the real by being caught up in all these things and by trying to force outcomes. Through my publishing, I have met astrologers. They are wonderful people. Sometimes I've asked them, but more like, you know, practical things, like if there is a patch in business, I've just asked them, "What is this phase like?" Which was years ago. I've stopped asking this probably for the last 10 years. But just that kind of a general direction, but not this obsession with the me. Paisa kab banega? Mera iske saath relationship kab tak hoga? Mujhe kab kaun milega? When will I meet this one? And most of your relationships, which are not family relationships, have been such beautiful divine coincidences where you've met people and they've blossomed into friendships, they've blossomed into teacher-disciple relationships. That is the beauty of life, which we are trying to preempt. And another thing which happens with this teaching is our obsession with control starts diminishing. Our unhappiness is directly proportionate to the control we feel we have over life. And there are people whose life will keep showing to them that they are not in control, but it is not destined that this understanding comes through that process. It might come at some point in the future, it will. But life keeps showing us that we are not in control, but we are obsessed with control. I have a friend who's a lawyer who had this ideal situation set up for himself with his son, that his son would grow up to be a lawyer. And to his dismay, whatever he did for his son was being rejected by the son, because the son was not built that way. The son was a creative guy, enjoying his walks on the beach, enjoying painting. But he tried to control this environment and control and control, and the relationship became so toxic that ultimately the son said that, "Look, either I leave because I can't bear it anymore, or you accept me for who I am." The son told the father that. Now the father has accepted it. But what punishment for the son, you know, because it's all based on the parents' conditioning. One cannot blame the parent because that is the parents' conditioning. But this obsession with control, we are all obsessed with it. You know, there are people who will buy new cars and you will see that even after 2 or 3 years, what do you call those, you know, where you pull them down to block the sun?
The shade visor,
whatever. Plastic is on it. Now that's a giveaway. You know why? Because that is control. I don't want that to get dirty. The car is 3 years old. I have seen it.
Mine is out of sheer laziness.
But you see, that's the degree we feel we can control decay. It comes up in very subtle ways. We want to protect and preserve. We are trying to control, which is not the law of life.
Recently, there was a case of this 18-year-old boy, the son of those bureaucrats.
Mm-hmm.
Two IS officers, mother also IS officer and husband also. She committed suicide at South Bombay only, somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
One doesn't know what really happened, whether they were trying to control him so badly.
And ourselves. We impose controls on ourselves.
When we question ourselves, why did you do that? We're not supposed to do that.
It's fantastic. Of course.
Yeah.
See, because we have acquired conditioning since birth that you should do this, you should not do that, you should be this way, you should not be there, you should think this way, you should not think that way. A whole internal dialogue is that, which is control. Should do and should not do is control. You see, spiritual practices have their role to play. They bring discipline into one's life. There's no denying that. The point is that is your sadhana and the benefits you derive from that restricted to the sadhana, or does it filter out into your daily living? You see, a lot of people have this grouse against Advaita and non-duality that it's the lazy man's way, because you all are not giving any practices. But truly, practices strengthen the ego at most times. Whereas this whole teaching is to show you a different perspective. Now, I have had people coming who have been doing Vipassana courses. There's nothing wrong with the Vipassana course. The point is that is the awareness filtering out and spilling over into your daily living? Or is your daily living a mess and then after 3 months you go back for the Vipassana course? Is what I told this girl. She said, I really enjoy the Vipassana course. I said, fantastic, because one is meant to. But if your daily living dialogue is a mess, which is why she comes and sees me, I said, what is going on? Is it that you're feeling good that I've done a 10-day Vipassana course being silent because I was forced to? So nothing wrong with the Vipassana course, but is the practice one is undertaking strengthening the ego and its sense of doership? Or is there blossoming? Is there blooming? You may go to temples, that may be your practice, which is fine. You may derive benefit from going to the temples, but can you see a direct impact in your daily living? Are you worshipping that same God which is in everyone and not just the murti in the temples? You see, that is why I feel that Advaita, not because it impacted me, is a very clear way of exposing the ego and its meanderings and its sense of doership. There's a lot of clarity. The lens is cleaned and scrubbed and polished, and then this is what is shining in its pristine purity, unadulterated by the doership of the thinking mind of the ego. The end of dialogue, the end of separation in that sense. Of course, we are separate as individuals. That is the functioning in daily living. But seeing the unity in the diversity, the commonness in everyone, that becomes the prism through which you view your life.
Sometimes you surrender completely, like everything, and then you don't feel yourself. What is the feeling inside? Whether feeling better or not? After some time, maybe your question again comes and take all these things as they are being told to us. That because they must have experienced this thing, and after that experience, they must have given the statement. You have to be certain.
Right.
That question comes whether to follow or not in that way.
Right.
And that is a very, very balanced thing.
Yes.
When to judge.
Yes.
And when to not to do these things.
Yeah.
That is the question actually that came. So some people they might. You know, they may be very smart to, you know, find a way how to dilemma.
That is also destined. But ultimately, if that is a validation of your life's experience, and if you get a taste of that in your daily living, that is meant for you.
Yeah, so that eventually it comes to what you are feeling.
Yes.
After a certain time.
Yes.
Not in the initial phase.
No.
That is the feeling you have to find out.
Sometimes you may know at the start, this is not meant for me.
Actually, I will tell you my experience. I am following a guru. He told me we have to do certain these kriyas in 3 times. I started doing all these things, despite being my very hectic schedule. I have to keep my dosha in the office. But I didn't find them, even after 6 months, I didn't find any difference. In fact, I was feeling I am not doing anything good, despite being very. Then I changed according to my.
Sure.
My daily routine and
right.
Giving very good results.
Fantastic. Exactly.
But I haven't stopped them that they are bad.
Yes.
But I have changed my, you know, according to my routine.
Fair enough. Fair
so
enough.
That we have to do, I mean, we have to feel the experience. Actually, feeling is very important.
Yes. But like you have said, there will be others who after 6 months have stopped or they are continuing but they are not happy about doing it. It's just it's on autopilot.
Yeah, that is not good.
You see?
That maybe he is right for most of the people. For it is me, I mean, it is not working. So I have to change.
Exactly.
And now they are doing even better.
That's it. That is it. The feeling better. That is exactly it. And what is feeling better? Who is feeling better? What is meant by feeling better? What are you getting from it?
Actually, I don't see even gaining or something. I don't do anything to gain or something. I just feel I feel better after that.
What is that feeling better?
Not even say feeling better. It is not giving me any better.
What is that? It is only one thing.
Yeah.
Peace. Any other feeling better is temporary because it will come and go, which means it was a pleasure. So that needs to be looked into. The true feeling better is ananda.
You can say, I mean, because that is...
Which is not bliss. Which is the bliss of peace. Any other feeling better will not last. You know, ananda actually means, if it's broken up, not blind. Andha, ananda. Siddharameshwar Maharaj has said this. Not blind to what? Because bliss could be an experience, and like all experiences, they come and go.
And you're all the more miserable and they're gone.
Exactly. So thank God. No experiences or heights of pleasure or visions of the divine, because then you start craving for that.
Exactly, yeah.
Ultimate bliss is the bliss of what is. Someone had asked Maharaj, you know, about discipline. And Maharaj says, but even I have a routine because that's the way I'm made. Even the birds and the bees have a timetable, so there's no problem with discipline. My own nature is very disciplined. I wake up early in the morning, I'm like, a very disciplined personality. It's not an effort. I'm not unhappy being disciplined. It's the nature to be disciplined. So once someone gifted me a book called The Yoga of Discipline. I think Guru Mai had written it. So I gave it back. I said, this I don't need to read. But discipline in daily living is to look at the thoughts of doership. Let's look at that discipline. Let's try catching ourselves there. Why restrict it to a few hours in the day? Go through your entire waking state. Look back. Even if it doesn't happen in the day, in the evening, look back at the events of the day and see all the moments where you thought an action was someone else's action or your action, as my guru would say, and investigate that. And all your judgments, criticisms, blame, condemnation, guilt, shame, hatred, malice, jealousy, envy, pride, arrogance will fall away. And what will be left is feeling better.
Molded, people like that. Very perfect and very intelligent thing. It gets, because that is a circadian rhythm. You know, it's a circadian rhythm. You are doing certain things for certain duration. After certain, you find that is for your body. Maybe disciplining means, I mean, that we are doing, changing our body for certain betterment of our mind. I think discipline is for body also and mind also, and intellect also. Not in a very obligatory manner.
You're glowing. I hope it stays when you go out.
It's the energy, it's so beautiful.
That's the thing, no? It's the energy. And what is the energy? It is because there have been meditations going on in this room since 1996.
So that's what parrots.
Yeah.
They come for satsang.
I've never seen parrots flying around.
Those two always come.
Yeah.
Plus your voice also, the way, it's just so beautiful.
But The parrots don't come for that.
They go back and do parroting sometimes.
Yeah, they're quite quiet when they come.
Yeah,
who knows? Yeah, who knows? One doesn't know, like Muktananda, I remember there was a rampaging elephant where he told his people, you treat this elephant with respect because he was a sadhu in his past life. That is why he has come here. And how we treat animals today. And the other thing is, the guru acts in very strange ways, you know. One cannot even judge that. Because to judge that is to judge God. But this elephant thing, I don't know how it reminded me of Baba Nityananda, I'll just end on that. Where in Sri M's book, how not to judge the actions of an avadhut or guru, you know. So his uncle took him to Baba Nityananda, and this boy was very young, he didn't want to go. And Nityananda was huge. He was like this big thing, you know. So the young boy is put in front, and Nityananda tells the uncle, "Theek hai, jao, you know, your blessings are over." And the boy comes there and he gives him such a tight slap. Fatak! And the boy starts screaming, shouting, "Where have you got me to this crazy place? I'll never come with you again," and all that, and is dragged out. But one cannot judge the actions, because after God knows how many years, 12 years or whatever, when he was with his guru said, "I have to teach you a kriya to open your lunar channel, or the pingala." So he said, fair enough, he did the kriya and the channel became clear, but he went back to his guru and said, "Baba, but what about the ida? What about the positive channel?" He said, "That was opened for you when you got a tight slap from Nityananda. In one shot he opened it. Here you have to do sadhana to open. So if someone slaps you, you never know what is the opening up." It's like one lady had come here for my mother's meditation and poor thing hit her head on the glass door. You know, so she came in and I told her, I said, "Chalo, aapki teesri aankh khul gayi." So she got so upset. She said, "Meri teesri aankh hamesha khuli thi. My third eye was always open." So I said, "Maybe it got closed then."